The next case we'll hear is number 2007-0938. Ms. Grigsby.
Yes, sir. May it please the court, I am Teresa Grigsby, and I'm here today on behalf of the City of Toledo, Lucas County, and the Toledo-Lucas County Port Authority. And I'd like to reserve 5 minutes.
Could I ask a question about that? Which party is it who owns the property?
The property is titled in the name of the City of Toledo. The City of Toledo has entered into a very long-term lease with the Toledo-Lucas County Port Authority for the airport environs. The Port Authority, in turn, has a number of subleases with various tenants who perform various functions at the airport, including the Ohio Air National Guard, United States government, and BAX Global, which operates a cargo hub on the south side.
So the Port Authority's role is, Port Authority is a long-term lessee from the city?
Port Authority is both a long-term lessee of the city, the titled owner, and a long-term sub-lessor of both Burlington and BAX Global and the United States government.
Okay. And the auditor then is also a client of yours?
Not my firm, but I'm presenting argument on behalf of all of the appellants.
Okay.
That's right.
You may proceed.
The facts of this case are very interesting, involve very strange coincidences. And I hope the opportunity is presented to us at some point to talk about those coincidental facts and what they mean to the merits of the case. But the issue today is much more limited. The issue today is whether the tax commissioner had authority to consider the application which was filed by the City of Toledo. It is notable to me, at least, that neither the tax commissioner or the attorney examiner had any doubts about the tax commissioner's authority to address the application on its merits. But when the limited relief that the tax commissioner accorded the applicants was made the subject of an appeal to the Board of Tax Appeals, that's the time when the issue of authority, whether we call that jurisdictional authority or statutory authority, surfaced for the first time.
Let me ask you a question about that. The tax commissioner's final determination in the case treated the application as an application for the year 2003?
Well, they referred to it as 2002, and then said that because the application was not filed by December 31, 2002, it was untimely. Of course, the problem is that the dual payments, the underlying difficulty, was not discovered until January 2003, and the application was filed just a few weeks later in March of 2003. It was under the opponent's position, we would have been required to file an application for remission even before we discovered the dual payments.
Let me go back to the final determination. I'm trying to figure out the relationship between the final determination and then what the board said, because you had alluded to that in your argument. The final determination, as I recall, treated as an application for 2003 and then remitted the taxes back to
as far back as they could. Yeah, yes, sir. It was a 3-year period. And
then the Board of Tax Appeals viewed it differently.
The Board of Tax Appeals viewed it differently and concluded that the application sought relief for 2002. The application was not filed until after December 31 of 2002 and therefore was untimely. Our position today is that it was functionally impossible to have complied with the deadline that the Board of Tax Appeals interpreted the statute as containing.
Let me ask you, though, in the argument in your brief and in the argument you're presenting this morning, is part of your contention or your request for this court, or maybe an alternative request, to to go back to the tax commissioner's final determination? Is that before that, us?
Well, I think that we would request a hearing by a body superior to the tax commissioner, whether it be the court or the Board of Tax Appeals, on the merits of the issue of the length of the exemption, because that was why the appeal was taken to the Board of Tax Appeals. We felt that there should be full remission of all taxes wrongly paid on property that was owned by the, or tangible property that was owned by the United States government. The tax commissioner remitted only 3 years, relying upon the three-year limitation within the language of the statute. That was why the appeal was taken, to consider the length.
So just so I'm clear on it, one possible outcome that you would be requesting, and there may be others, mm-hmm. would be a return to what happened at the tax commissioner level with the final determination, where there was a grant of exemption for the year 2003 and a remission back for whatever number of years it was. And then, of course, additional to that, you would also like additional remission.
That's correct. Okay. That's correct. But of course, the Board of Tax Appeals did not reach the issue of length, because it went off on a side consideration of the issue of whether the application was timely, number one, and number two, in proper form. The question of whether it was in proper form, I think, need not detour us long, because that was the issue there is whether or not the application contained the required treasurer certification. Indeed, it did. And indeed, as a matter of fact, not only is the required certification there and in appropriate form, as a matter of fact, full payment of all taxes that were required, that were due to be paid, we would say parenthetically wrongly, but due to be paid, had been paid. There is independent evidence in the record consisting of receipts for canceled checks and the like, which we cite in our brief, which shows that payment had occurred. So that the taxes that
and that was through year what 2001.
Depends on whether you're talking about assessment year or collection year, but everything that was due and owing had been paid, and I guess that's the best way and the most direct way to say it. So I think the issue of whether or not the application is in proper form because of the treasurer's certification is the lesser of the two issues. The more significant statutory issue is the issue of the timing. And in our brief, we take the position that there is an ambiguity in the statute as to what tax year means. Does it mean the year of collection, or does it mean the year of assessment? We also take the position that if that ambiguity is construed in our favor, there has been full compliance, but even if there were not, there has been substantial compliance. I would like to focus today, in the few minutes that we have, on still another interpretation of that statutory language. When you look at that language, and you look very carefully at it, it says this: an application for exemption and a complaint against exemption shall be filed prior to the 31st day of December of the tax year for which the exemption is requested, or for which the liability of the property to taxation in that year is requested. I suggest to Your Honor that what the statute does is creates two alternatives. When you zero in on that language and you overlay it on top of the Board of Tax Appeals opinion, it appears that the Board of Tax Appeals did not consider that second alternative. So Your Honor might ask, well, what does that second clause mean? Or you might ask, does that second clause show an alternative way, an alternative date by which an application must be filed? And if you begin to dissect that language, you see that it creates within itself the possibility that the December 31st date could apply in one of two calendar years. It could apply to the calendar year in which the exemption is requested, 2002, or it could apply to December 31 of the year for which the liability of the property to taxation in that year is requested. And so I would suggest to the court that the December 31st deadline can fall in more than 1 year if the liability year is different than the exemption year. And that's the key in this case. That's the key thought I'd like to leave you with today because it's a slightly different twist.
Well, there's actually a couple of questions I'd like to ask, too. The tax commissioner's determination addresses the claim that, and it's the improvements on the land, correct?
Not yes, sir.
It's the National Guard related improvements.
Physical improvements to the National Guard base.
And there's a claim that those are owned by the federal government.
Indeed are owned by the federal government. And if you look at the lease agreements, which are in the record, that is the source of that conclusion.
Now, the tax commissioner rejected that argument, but the board didn't address it. And my question for you is, that's part of your case here this morning, is that there needs to be a full final determination of that
exactly.
issue?
Yes, sir. Our position would be that property, physical property that is owned by the United States government cannot be taxed, and any such tax is void ab initio. And so therefore, the 3-year limitation that applies to the remission statute cannot possibly be applied here. Rather, there must be complete remission.
And that brings up another question. I think at some point in your brief, you talk about no other remedy than the statutes that are at issue here. And I'm wondering, is in a situation, let's say there's land and there's buildings, and somehow they belong to the federal government, but taxes are wrongly paid on them. Is there any provision in Ohio law other than these exemption applications that allows the recovery of such illegally assessed or wrongly paid? Is there no other?
We know of no other. And I can assure you that when this strange, amazing coincidence came to light and this dual payment was discovered, that attorneys for the county, the city, the Port Authority, BAX, the United States government, all tried to find additional means to provide relief, and none were to be found but the remission statutes. None seemed to accord a remedy.
And just so I'm clear, too, on that, the actual money in this case was paid by this private entity, BAX?
The money was paid by BAX Global.
And the federal government hasn't paid any
of it? The federal government has paid nothing. Because the federal government, and therein may lie one of it's speculation, but therein probably lies the source of the problem here. The federal government, knowing that it is never responsible for taxes, never filed for an exemption as to its newly, its expansion of its Air National Guard facility, because there was no need to. No exemption was ever filed. Meanwhile, Burlington constructs a logistics center that has the exact same value. Within a few dollars of the $2.7 million Air National Guard facility. It's a bizarre circumstance, and the remission statutes, we contend, ought be used to effect a remedy. But we're never going to get to that unless...
Let me ask you about that remedy again, too, because you're presenting argument today on behalf of the auditor. And where did the mistake that's alleged occur? Was that the auditor's mistake or the
Well, I suppose that you could say that there are a number of people who, in retrospect, probably should they have discovered this problem. Was it the auditor's mistake that their field representative, an employee of a private contractor, issued field building permits and submitted them to the auditor for the assignment of a parcel number? Perhaps, but on the other hand, usually that is done and then, it is combined with the exempt parcel and is deactivated. That never occurred here, probably because the owner of those improvements, the United States government, never would have thought to do so. It's a very strange series of coincidences.
Thank you, Ms. Grigsby.
Thank you.
Mr. Clifford.
Morning, Your Honor. My name is Damian Clifford. I'm here on behalf of the tax commissioner. I want to address a couple issues regarding the application. I know you raised a question as to how this was processed by the tax commissioner. What the tax commissioner did is, because of the City of Toledo failure to file the application timely, considered the application to be submitted for exemption in 2003 and remitted taxes in 2000 through 2002. The BTA on appeal looked at it and said, wait, tax commissioner, you don't have an ability to look at the merits of this case because of the fact that there's this failure to comply with these two statutes. I think it's helpful to start.
Let me ask you about that. So the tax commissioner originally was willing to look at, consider this application as an application for 2003.
I believe that is what the final determination says. That's correct.
And then subsequently the board declined to do that.
Right.
And then the commissioner's position now is that the board is correct. That the commissioner was
wrong,
that he was jurisdictionally barred from viewing it as a 2003 application.
Barring it as a 2002 application, I believe.
Okay.
Okay.
Explain that to me again.
When the application was filed, it was filed March 19th of 2003, seeking exemption and remission of taxes from 1994 through 2002.
Right.
The tax commissioner, in receiving that application March 19, 2003, looked at it and said, hey, the statute clearly says 5715-27F requires that you have to file the application for exemption by December 31st of the tax year in which you seek exemption and remission. So in looking at that, clearly on its face, the application didn't comply with 5715-27F. So the tax commissioner said, okay, well, we're going to consider this then in 2003. And so they considered the exemption in 2003 and they granted remission. The BTA, in looking at it, said, you tax commissioner, you don't have the authority to waive jurisdictional requirements.
And let me be clear, was the BTA saying, when the commissioner said, even though on the face of the application it says it's applying for 2002, we'll look at it as an application for 2003, is the BTA saying the commissioner has no jurisdiction to do that?
To waive the statutory requirements? Yes. To consider if it's an application submitted for tax year 2002, submitted in 2003, you tax commissioner don't have the ability to say that this is an application for 2002 because it wasn't filed within the statutory confines of 5715-27F.
Well, it wasn't filed within those confines for 2002.
Correct.
But if it were considered, let's say on the face of the application it said this is an application for 2003, it was timely for a 2003 application.
It would be timely for 2003. If it was an application from 2003, it would be timely in that aspect. But then you have the other problem, which is the second prong of our case, where you're looking at 5713.08A1, which says that the treasurer's certificate must indicate that taxes are paid to the date of the application. In this case, if we want to consider it for 2003, the taxes are indicated as paid through 2001. So it doesn't on its face comply with the statute for the requirements.
Well, let me ask you about that, because doesn't that statute, and we've been looking at that in the other case and in this case, doesn't that say that taxes have to be paid, but not the taxes that would be subject to being remitted?
Correct.
If the application were granted.
Correct, that is correct. But in our case, we have a indication from the treasurer's certificate indicating the taxes were only paid through 2001. If we're seeking exemption in 2003, we're missing a year.
But the use of this property, my understanding is, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong, it's being used all along for these National Guard purposes, and it's been used that way for, let's say, a decade.
That may be true, but unless you comply with the jurisdictional requirements, you never get to the merits. I mean, The issues raised here are...
But if that use is in place on January 1st of all these years, coming right up to 2003, then wouldn't the taxes for those years be subject to being remitted as far back as is permitted? And wouldn't that then allow an exemption to go forward for 2003?
I would say potentially they could be remitted, but because of the fact of we don't have this treasurer certificate indicating the taxes were paid, were current to the day of the application, okay, it's the fatal flaw. I'm not saying that it couldn't be remitted, but I'm just saying because of the fact that we have a treasurer certificate indicating the taxes were paid in 2001, not 2003, that's the problem in this case. I think a good way to start is to look at what the general framework is of this case. You know, all real property in the state is subject to taxation. The burden is upon the taxpayer to demonstrate that an exemption is appropriate. And then an exemption certificate the granting of an exemption must be strictly construed against the taxpayer. That's what prior statutes and case law have held regarding this issue. Another issue raised by the appellant in this matter is there's some ambiguity in the statute in looking at 5715.27F. Well, this court has addressed that issue precisely in Olmsted Falls. They said specifically that 5715.27 is clear and unambiguous and must be applied accordingly. So the claim by the appellant that this statute is ambiguous has been flatly rejected by the Supreme Court previously. The other issue is the substantial compliance that, well, I know our treasurer's certificate doesn't indicate that the taxes were paid through the date of the application. However, we've substantially complied because, well, we filed it, we meant to file it in 2002, we filed it in 2003, but we have this treasurer's certificate indicating taxes were paid through 2001. Again, the cases that were cited, none of them interpret 5713.08A1. There is no substantial compliance. In fact, if we look at Strongsville and Cleveland Clinic, that's just the opposite. It says that it must be strictly construed. So the claims that substantial compliance occurred in this instance are completely without merit in light of the fact that this court has plainly said, look, you must comply with what the statute requires. There's also an argument raised by appellant in their brief, which indicates that the flaws in the application are not really jurisdictional. Well, again, I think Cleveland Clinic and Strongsville plainly reject that argument. I mean, they say these are jurisdictional requirements, and unless you comply with the jurisdictional requirements in submitting this application, the tax commissioner is without authority to look at the merits of this case. So that's where we're at here. We have this problem where the appellant in this instance failed to comply on two prongs in submitting this application.
Let me ask you a question I posed to counsel before. In the tax commissioner's view, is there any, let's assume there's a situation where there's federal ownership of real property.
Hypothetically,
and somehow by mistake or illegal assessment, taxes have been paid with respect to that property.
Okay.
Is there any remedy under Ohio law for getting that money back?
There is a statute. I don't have the exact provision, but there is a statute for illegally assessed taxes. So I believe that statute would have the ability to look at that and say, where you can file an action and say that these taxes are legally assessed. I apologize for not having the exact revised code section, but there is a statute which deals with legally assessed tax. So in your instance where there is this illegally assessed tax on the federal government, I think that statute
would
help.
What's the statute of limitation on that? Do you know?
I don't know off the top of my head. I do apologize on that. The other issue
let me ask you, following up on that too. In the tax commissioner's view, is it necessary to file an application for exemption to exempt federally owned property?
Well, that's something I haven't thought of, and I don't know if I'd be prepared to answer that question. And I don't want to get to the merits of this case because we're here solely on the jurisdictional issue, and I think that unless you get past the jurisdictional issue, you never get to the merits. I will say that in looking at the record in this case, and this is the only thing I'll say on this issue, is that an assessment was never issued to the federal government. No tax was ever paid by the federal government. So the claim that this is a tax on the federal government, I think, is not true. And I'll just leave it at that, because I don't want to get into the merits for the fact that until you have jurisdiction, you never get to consider.
Well, but if the court did get past the jurisdictional issues, then
I think the relief requested by appellant is a remand to the Board of Tax Appeals to address the merits.
To address the merits. And that would include the status of improvements as federal property.
I think that potentially could come up, and then I also think an issue.
And also the use of public property for public, in other words, City of Toledo property for public purpose.
And then I also think there'd be an issue regarding ownership, who has the ability to assert exemption or something along those lines. But because we're here solely on jurisdiction, I think that that's what the focus. I would hope the focus of the court would be on those issues. I believe that the holding of the BTA was correct, reasonable, and lawful, and as a result, would seek affirmation of the BTA's holding, which indicated that the tax commissioner was out of jurisdiction to consider this case. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Clifford. Ms. Grigsby, you've reserved 21 seconds, but you just have a full 30.
Just brief follow-up, Your Honor. Look closely at the treasurer's certificate and also look at the evidence in the record. Every single tax bill submitted through 2002 has been paid. There was no unpaid tax bill submitted, admittedly wrongly submitted, but submitted on this property that went unpaid. The treasurer's certificate, which shows no unpaid taxes, is correct and should not be a jurisdictional bar. Secondly, with regard to the other statute, the timing statute, look at closely at those Strongsville cases and the Cleveland Clinic case, because both of them say that the problem with an application in those cases was that it was not that there had not been full payment. There was full payment here. The remedy alluded to by counsel is the statutory remedy in RC 319.36 for erroneously paid taxes. That applies only to clerical errors, and that has been interpreted to not embrace the kind of error that is at issue here.
If you could just finish up in a sentence.
Yes, and then last point, Your Honor, is simply as to the date of the timing of this application, our position is that the court can rightly find the statute to be ambiguous. But the court can also find, if it doesn't conclude it to be ambiguous, that the only meaning that the alternatives included within that statute allows is that there are two possible December 31st dates in two different calendar years due to the arrearage.
Thank you, Ms.
Thank you.
This case will be submitted, and the court will advise the parties of its decision.